Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, welcome to the Save the Kids podcast. It's your one-stop shop for raising kids in this tech-heavy world. We bring on professionals and experts to give you all the tools you need to help your kids become fire-breathing warriors that have the strength to break out of the mold society has put them in. At the end of the day, we're all here for one reason, to help save some kids. I'm your host, Nate Webb. Let's get to it. What's up, everybody, and welcome back to the Save the Kids podcast. It's your host, Nate Webb, live in Studio Salt Lake City area, and we got a show for you today. So many of us want to instill in our kids strong family values, and so many of us just aren't sure how to do that, how to help our kids, how to lead them in the way they need to be led. And sometimes it can be really stressful trying to do that, trying to help teach our kids, make good decisions, lead our kids as they make bad decisions, and then help them overcome them. It can be stressful and hard. Today, my guest has been through all of that, and they have a wonderful story and expertise to share. Everybody meet Mel Hashi. Is it Hashi?
Hashi, you were
Hashi.
So close.
Ah, so okay. Close. So the Hashi family was living a normal life. Joe was a high school teacher and a business owner. Mel was a former social worker turned stay-at-home mom of three. Then 2020 happened and turned them upside down. They found themselves giving up their dream home, moving 2,000 miles away from home to a town where they know nobody. And it turned out being the best thing that could have happened to their family. Joe and Mel use their experience to build the Strong Family Co. framework that any family can use to establish values and stress-free family leadership. Welcome to the show, Mel. Happy to have you here.
Thank you so much. And I love your energy.
Oh, thank you. Thank you. Gotta do something, man.
That's right.
So tell us about your story. I mean, living the normal life, 2020 comes around and just y'all shook everything up. You moved 2,000 miles away from, so from what state did you go to?
We went from upstate New York, which I feel like I have to specify, to Colorado.
Okay. The nice country people.
Yeah. I mean, everybody just assumes when you say New York, they mean the city, which, you know, that's perfectly fine. Yeah. But we're upstate New York.
Yeah. Gotcha. To Colorado. Okay. So you're mountain time, same as me.
Yes.
I mean,
yes,
Utah.
Exactly. Yeah. We're not too far from you, actually, ironically. Yeah.
Oh, really? Really? What? Okay, cool.
Well, meaning state-wise compared to New York. We're near the Colorado Springs area.
Right. Okay. No, it's still, I mean, that's not horribly too far. You know, I mean, it's not across the flipping country.
No, it's not. That's true.
So what went into moving and all that? How did that go down? Tell us your story.
Sure. So Joe and I started out, you know, I guess fairly normal, you would say. He was a teacher, I was a social worker. And then once he started his business, I stayed home with the boys, which I was very thankful for.
What was his business?
We opened a couple gyms.
Ooh.
So personal training centers, yes.
Okay,
which we actually, we still run them from a distance, which is a challenge, but that was part of the deal with moving.
Right.
But when basically, we were doing all these things that normal families would do. We did buy our dream home. We had a duplex before that. We had a couple other rentals. And when 2020 hit, all of our gyms closed. And we honestly had no idea when they were going to reopen. They were supposed to reopen with the phase one, I believe. And then they got pushed to the final phase. And Joe and I got into this habit of walking together every day, which eventually became part of our strong family system to make sure that the couple is connected. And one day he said to me, "Hey, what if we moved?" And I said, "You're crazy." It's absolutely a crazy idea because this is where we grew up. It's where we met. It's where our families are, where the grandparents are. I never thought I'd be the type of person that could just pick up and move. But honestly, after a couple hours, even just thinking about it, the opportunities started to come up because of it. Oh. And also we had set up our core values, which I know we're going to talk about soon. We had set those up maybe a year before that. And we thought to ourselves, if we really are going to live by our values that we set up, this is something we really have to consider. Now, I had never been to Colorado. I had never been past Ohio. So Joe and I, took a couple days. We flew out just to kind of see where we would be moving, if we were moving at all. And actually, back up a step, it's kind of funny. The very next morning after we took that walk and discussed this, I printed out a list of the 50 states and just thought, where could we see ourselves moving? where is there a lot of sun? Because back in New York, where we were living, a lot of
Ooh.
gloomy days. So that sun
Yeah.
was honestly like a huge factor.
No Chicago, no Seattle, no.
No. And, we're not exactly city people either. So we wanted something that had a lot of adventure, truly things that would align with our personal family values that don't have to be your values, but those were what ours were.
Right.
And we really did buy the first house that we saw. A year later, we moved because I was homeschooling that year because New York wasn't allowing kids to go for more than one day a week. So
Wow.
I was doing the homeschooling thing. In the middle of that, we had this whole system of how we would like move all of our bins to the garage whenever we were going to show our house because we had to sell our house as well. And it was a pretty wild year, but we knew something good was coming. At least Joe and I did. The kids had a harder time with the adjustment, and I could share that if you'd like too, because
Oh yeah.
it was. We have three boys. Right now,
Yes.
they're 13, 11, and 5. So this was about 2 years ago. The little one just didn't really know what was going on. The oldest was kind of cool with it. He's like, all right, whatever. And then my middle son
That middle
really,
kid.
really struggled. You know what? He just strongly disliked me, to put it nicely.
Yeah.
And honestly, I was the one that was with them all the time, so he really took it out on me. And I just had to talk to Joe and not take it personally. And I had this
Right.
plan. I said, he's not letting me hug him. He's not letting me like do anything loving with him because he's so angry. I started to write him little love notes. And this is just like, hey, I love you. And I would just like hide it in his bedroom. And initially he'd find them and like tear them to pieces. And I was like, okay, this isn't gonna go well. But honestly, I just kept at it. And eventually he would read it and just kind of like not tear it apart. And then one night he would say to me, okay, tonight I'll let you give me a hug. And fast forward to now, 2 years after moving, he is thriving in incredible ways. But I had to kind of push through that struggle at the beginning. And really what got me through it was just communicating with my husband and kind of trying to find humor in it because we use humor to kind of get through difficulty.
Right. You gotta laugh or you're gonna cry. How old was
Right.
how old were your kids when you guys moved?
So if it was 2 years ago, it would have been like 11, 9, and 3.
Woof. You have an 11-year-old, 9-year-old, and then a 6-year gap and a 3-year-old.
Yes, we have a big gap there.
Man, oh man. So your 3-year-old is like, oh, I just work here. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. He just kind of goes with the flow.
And then your 9-year-old was like, this isn't cool. What are you
Exactly.
doing, mom and dad? I can't go to grandma and grandpa's house. I can't go anyone's house. But it ended up, I mean, so you say it ended up being the best decision that could ever happen for your family, best thing you could have ever done. Why is that? What are some of the results of you guys moving that have improved your life and your family?
Sure. Well, the first one that I kind of mentioned already was that we truly made a decision aligned with our values. The one thing that really held us back in making the decision was how do we feel okay with leaving family? And not that that wasn't important, but the way our values are written and the way we want to live genuinely by our values. So it really just strengthened us as a family, realizing that we can make decisions based on our values. We can do things that go against the norm because people thought we were kind of crazy to do this thing. And secondly, it truly helped the kids become resilient because I think that when you go through something like that, and I recently listened to your podcast on confidence, the kids have to experience it for themselves to be able to build the resilience. So now that we moved and things did not fall apart, they're all okay. They all have made friends. They're thriving at school. We have a lot of extracurricular things. We specifically chose an area that we thought would align with the values. So lots of adventuring, lots of outside stuff, hiking. They've taken up mountain biking. There's really great opportunities here for
Mean not
3D.
sitting inside and vegetating all the time? What?
Exactly. So
What?
everything that we could offer them, just this weekend, we ended up finding this used mountain bike for my son. He's so excited. He just wants to bike all day long. He's like, I don't want to go to school tomorrow. I just want to bike all day. So
That's a good problem to have.
it is a good problem to have. He already made plans with his brother to bike after school today. So they have a plan set up. But truly, it helped us to feel really, really set in our core values. It built the kids' resilience and it almost gave us this freedom to just do things without the pressure of what you're used to. When you're kind of, and I'm not saying everyone should up and move, but it's very easy
Right.
to make decisions based on what you're used to just because you don't know anything different. So moving here really helped us to just push ourselves. It helped us to become closer as a family because really to get through the move and to get through this whole stressful process, you have to communicate and be close and be willing to not take things personally when the kids struggle, like I explained
Right.
with my youngest son. So it's been growth for all of us in different ways, individually, and also as a family unit.
And you mentioned earlier that you guys had set those family values, that you wanted to make intentional decisions with those family values. When did you do that? And was it like a formal, like we were writing and it came to pass, like, put it in writing and actualize? Or was it like a chill pillow talk with your spouse over a few months? Like, we want to be as a family? I don't know. Let's go to bed. It's 1 o'clock. Like, well, how did that come to pass? You guys coming with those family values?
It's a great question. So some part of it that I like to start by saying, people want to be a good family. I think everybody wants to say, my family is good, my family is great. But really, you
Absolutely.
have to be more specific. I can't just say, my family's great. Well, how? How do you know that they're great? What do you do or think or talk about? So really the background for how we got into this is that my husband owns a business. And he, when he was first starting off, he did not go to school for business. He was a teacher. So in order to learn, he would go and visit all kinds of businesses. And oftentimes they would have a mission statement or core values, on the wall of the business. And sometimes they just kind of live on the wall. And sometimes businesses truly make decisions based on them. So he thought to himself, hey, why don't we apply this to family living? Because honestly, it might sound a little boring, but your family is an organization that should be run as such. And we really want our kids to grow up in a highly functioning organization. So when they go out into the real world, they understand what that is.
Okay.
So we did, but we did have a very specific process we went through. So once we decided, hey, let's kind of take this leap of faith, let's figure this out, we took a couple weeks just writing down anything that we find valuable individually. So he did his list and I made my list. And that can be things like faith, education, cooking, like it can be anything that you find valuable as a person. And then we basically set a meeting. I think we were driving for 6 hours to go on vacation or something. Well, this would be a great time.
Yeah, captive
And
audience can't run away from
exactly.
each other.
Right. So we sat down and we did this technique called kill, keep, or combine.
Okay,
So
start,
if,
stop, continue. Cool. Yeah, similar. Cool.
okay. So killed simply means there's a value that's on the list. It's not something we would like stand for. So we're going to just kill it off the list. It's important. Everything we wrote down is important to us, but is it one of those like 3 to 7 core things we're truly going to stand for as a family? If
Right.
it's
Are you
not,
willing to die on that hill? Right. The type of thing.
exactly.
Yeah.
No, that's exactly right. You have to make these decisions. And honestly, it makes for really great discussion between the spouses or the partners. Second, keep is just, this sounds like a good one we want to keep. We're going to keep talking on it and combine. If I had gratitude written down, he had thankfulness written down, we would simply combine them. And we would spend a lot of time just whittling it down to, like I said, 3 to 6, because what's memorable is portable. No one's going to remember 15 values.
No.
Yeah, exactly. So we have 6 that we came up with, but it's 3 to 7, whatever. Enough that you as an adult could remember it and that your children can remember it. And we had younger kids at the time. So we did this probably when they were, I don't know, 9, 7, and 2 or something like that. So we did this on our own. If you have teenagers, though, I think it would be awesome to start as the adults, but then involve the kids in their opinion of what they see as valuable and how that can be included. It's great for buy-in when you have older children.
Gotcha. Okay, so you came up with your family values, and then you've moved and everything. And then where along the road did you guys create the Strong Family Project?
Well, we started about 6 months ago, so it took us about a year and a half. And
Okay.
the neat thing is it wasn't that we were like 3 years ago, we're like, we're going to create this thing and then start putting it out there.
Right.
Once we moved, we'd have friends come visit us and they'd say, hey, you guys kind of do some fun things and some interesting things in your family, like the values, the way we run our family meetings and different things like that. Why don't you share this with other families? And honestly, this is, I tend to have little freakouts when there's like a new idea. Just like when Joe mentioned moving across the country, I kind of freaked out. So I thought, well, this sounds like a cool idea. Joe can do that because I've never been in front of a camera before. So I was very nervous. But when I realized that other families truly could learn from this, and that we could help other families just be stronger, because we don't really have a playbook for how to be a good family. We
Right.
don't take a class in how to be good parents. Like, you
how not
basically
to suck. Like, it's it's not there.
That's right, because either you had a great example growing up, or you kind of have to piece it together. So we
Right.
have this, that's why we thought this strategy would be super helpful. And it really came about just from other people giving us feedback and thinking that we had something to share.
Okay. And then, so a big thing that you guys preach is your seven elements of a strong family path. That's part of the things that make you unique, right? Because a lot of people, you think of family meetings and that's family fight night. You know, and so what are those seven elements of your strong family path that are helpful for families so they can develop their strong, you know, family path?
Sure. So the first we already talked a lot about was the core values. That's truly the foundation, because everything else builds off of that.
Okay.
So that's the first one. Another is we do goal setting. So again, that can sound kind of like, well, okay, is this, you know, a
okay,
January
Tony
thing?
Robbins. Yeah.
Exactly. But really, it's about instilling confidence in kids and even in the parents in their role modeling. So at the beginning of the year, you really could do it any time of year. We all drew a picture for 10 minutes individually of all the things we want to accomplish this year. And then every week at our family meeting, we set a little commitment that week. So if your goal is to read 10 books this year, okay, my commitment this week is going to be 10 minutes a day of reading. So it's not just setting this dream like, oh, it'd be nice if someday I lost 20 pounds, or it'd be nice if I could read these books this year. It's actually helping our kids set the goal and then do actionable steps every day to try to reach that. So we do that goal setting piece, and we have like the pictures hanging up in the kitchen, so we're always reminded of them. Another piece that we do is the morning routine. So a lot of this stuff is routine stuff. And I know it can almost sound like, well, of course I've heard of a morning routine, but it's the way we phrase it. So we believe that every member of the family is valuable and every member of the family can contribute. So we call it a contribution, not like a chore, because again, chore has such a negative, yucky connotation. So we just call it a contribution.
Okay. Okay.
Yeah, so just a little bit of, sometimes it's just the words that you use and the way you communicate the goal of what you're trying to do.
The semantics matter sometimes.
They sure do. And same thing, like you mentioned with the family meeting, I think historically, even if it's like a work meeting, who wants to think about that? Nobody wants to go to a meeting.
Right.
But this is such an awesome opportunity for the kids to learn how to communicate, how to be a part of a meeting that runs smoothly, and they get a say. So just to give you a quick little glimpse, we start off the meeting by everybody talking about how they've embodied a core value. So one of ours, for example, is being adventurous. So if my son went on an extra difficult bike ride that week, he can say, hey, I embodied the core value by going out on this bike ride and like trying something more challenging than usual. So we're always trying to connect. These values don't just sit on our wall. Like, we're talking about them at dinner almost every day. And then after that, we talk about discussion topics, any kind of topic that might need to be brought up or that the kids want to bring up. And this is where they learn to communicate and problem solve. So they might bring up an issue like, maybe I say, you guys are using too much tech time. How can we solve that problem? So it's not mom and dad telling them what to do. It's, hey, you guys give us solutions. What do you think will be good to solve this? And honestly, 95, not even more than that, 99% of the time, they think of a solution. We're like, hey, let's try it on for size this week. We'll reconvene next Saturday and see how it's working. So they get buy-in because they're coming up with solutions.
That's awesome. They're coming up with their own solutions. That makes your life as a parent so much easier when you're not feeling like you're having to fix everything. You're like, you know what?
Yeah.
Let's just, you know, we have this a meeting or whatever, and these kids are going to help come up with their own solutions. And then they actually do it because it was their idea.
Exactly. And then you're not always the bad guy, just like telling them what to do. It's like, you guys came up with this. And honestly, they're super creative. I think a lot of times adult minds are so bogged down with whatever, and kids just have this fresh new way of looking at it that they come up with great solutions.
Yeah,
so,
they do. Kids are amazing. Now, the thing is, though, so many, I mean, I grew up hating family meetings, and mostly because of that. It felt really, really super, super formal and scary and fight nighty. And so how do you, I mean, you kind of showed your organization there. How does it turn into something that kids aren't rolling their eyes at all the time, that they're like actually like not hating family meetings? Like, do you still call them family meetings, Or like, what have you done with them to kind of transform that connotation around them?
We do call it family meetings, but you could name it something else. But there's several things that we do that's important. First of all, it's once a week, every week. So I think historically, family meetings are seen as something terrible because usually it's only when something bad has happened.
Right.
Like, hey, we're going to have this meeting because you misbehaved, or we're going to have this meeting because, hey, we're moving, or something like that. So
yeah, that could.
Yeah, we had that one. But this way, if it's an expected thing every week, then it's not something scary or awful because they almost look forward to it. We also do it during dinner. So we believe in like habit stacking. We're already having dinner together on Saturday and as often as we can, but Saturday works most consistently for us. So we're just going to tack it on. So about 10 minutes into dinner, my husband will say, okay, everybody think of how they embodied a core value this week. So there's a lot of confidence building, a lot of sharing from the kids. And they actually really enjoy the tough truth part because we do this thing called tough truths where you can give some positive criticism and they can also do it towards us. So one time my son said, Mom, I have to give you a tough truth. I don't like the dinner that you made tonight.
My goodness.
But we've like created this situation where I'm not going to take it personally. I value his opinion. I truly do. And then I'm like, hey, okay, give me some other options, right? Like, so they enjoy it because it's consistent. It's expected. They can bring discussion topics to the table. It's not us telling them. They can bring ideas to the table too. And we also share compliments. We give firm handshakes. Like, it's a whole process that builds confidence. But I think being consistent is the best, most important piece of it, because then you know it's not going to be always something negative. It's usually something positive.
Man, that is big. Family dinners, like family meetings are one thing, but family dinners, it is a crucial spot where kids learn how to communicate and talk and not be, I mean, absorbed with, I mean, when we talk about, you know, social media and smartphones and stuff, but just in general, family dinners are a great time for families to connect as a family. Those families that are ravaged by different turmoils that end up, you know, breaking up for whatever reason it may be, a lot of it is just the lack of connection within the family itself. And so those family dinners where you can, I mean, once a week's not that much, guys. Like, if you can find one meal a week that you can all have together, especially while your kids are younger, it's way easy to do that every single day, at least once a meal. Now, after your family dinner plan and the conversation topics, you have this really cool thing that I love because it makes me think of like spy movies. You got your evening debrief for the kids.
Yeah.
For the kids to be heard. Tell us about that.
This also kind of came about organically. I would basically, so I'll give you a little background. I was a social worker for a couple of years, and there was this concept called the doorknob conversation. So your client would come in, they talk to you for 40 minutes, and then right at the end of the session is when they get to the meat and potatoes. Like right when they're about to leave, that's when they bring up that really juicy topic that you really wish they would have brought up at the beginning. And this is how the evening debrief came about. So I would go downstairs, I would, because our bedrooms for the kids are downstairs. I put my little one to bed, I do his bedtime routine, and then I would go see my older two. And I would notice that at this point, from my perspective, I'm tired. It's like 9 o'clock. I just want to go to bed or go read a book or whatever.
Right.
But this is when they would always bring up, you know, the drama that occurred at recess, or I heard this kid say this. And it would always come up at the end of the day, kind of at an inconvenient time. But these are things that don't necessarily come up at dinner. They come up when the kids are all like cozy and ready for bed. And this is when they feel most comfortable. So I noticed this pattern. And I decided, you know, I'm going to give them this half an hour every day. Sometimes they need just 5 minutes of my time. Sometimes it takes the full half an hour. And it's kind of funny because I'll come upstairs to go to bed and it'll be like a lot later than usual. And my husband will be like, I guess the evening debrief was like really intense tonight. Because sometimes they just need to get something off their chest. They just need someone to talk to. And if you don't carve out that time, it's just going to dissipate. Like there, if I say to my kid, hey, I'm really tired tonight, why don't you talk to me about this tomorrow morning? It's gone. It's not going to come up in the morning again.
Oh, it's not important. Not a big deal. Never mind.
Yeah. So I think if you just carve out that time at bedtime, just in case they have something that they need to share with you, even if you're tired or whatever the case may be, I think it really puts deposits into that relationship you have with them. So when they get a little older, or if something really happens that's hard for them, they know that you're going to be there for them, that their time, that your time is valuable, and that you share it with them. So I think it's almost like this investment in the relationship every night,
Yeah.
so that when the big thing happens, hopefully it doesn't, but
Right.
things happen, that they know, they trust you, that you'll be there and make time for them.
Oh, that is so big. Because a lot of times, the only reason kids don't trust us with the big things is because they don't trust us with the small things, or we haven't taken time to experience the small things with them. And so,
Yes.
when you can do something small consistently, that's when they will be able to trust you with something big when it does come up. I love this quote. I don't even know who said it, but it was like, extraordinary people aren't extraordinary because they did something extraordinary. They're extraordinary because they did something normal an extraordinarily amount of times.
Yes, you're so right. And I think kids oftentimes, or parenting is very selfless.
Yeah.
So like I could be sitting down there and just like in my mind thinking, can you just wrap it up already? Like I've heard about the soccer drama for like the
Yep.
50th time.
Yep.
But
Yep.
I know that if I show that, like I know, I of course I'm there because I want to be. However, sometimes I'm just kind of done with it. But I
Right.
know what I'm doing. I'm intentionally giving them my time so that they can gain that trust, like you said, in
Yeah.
those little bits.
And then
So.
your last element is home relationships to be mindful of. I think we're now, I know where we're going with this, but tell us about it.
Okay. So we're obviously a family as one big unit, but within that unit, there are so many sub relationships. So there's Joe and I, and then there's each of the kids with each other. So the sibling
Right.
relationships. Then there's each individual parent to each individual child. And then there's also each individual. So, like, what we mean by keeping tabs on it is like, let's say one of our kids is starting to struggle for some reason. I might go on a walk with my husband, which we still try to do on a daily basis. And I'm like, hey, our 13-year-old seems like something's going on. I think we might have to invest a little one-on-one time with him in the next couple of days and figure this out. So it's always being aware of what's going on. Let's say you have two kids that are like fighting a little more than usual lately. You might want to notice that and then do something about it before it gets worse. So it's just keeping tabs on individuals. I think we all know as parents that if you spend time with one kid versus all of them at the same time, they're so different. If I go on a walk with one of my sons versus like all three, it's a very different experience. So I try to carve out like time. Like I pick up my 13-year-old from school because that's 15 minutes that I can spend with him after school to almost like debrief or give him an opportunity to just be with me just in case there's something there. So I try to carve out those times. My middle son decided to kind of hang out upstairs before going to bed a little bit because he wanted some one-on-one time with me. Sometimes
Oh.
sometimes the evening debrief doesn't work as well for him because he wants just me, not me and his older brother.
Right.
But it's a matter of recognizing like he needs this. Like, yeah, do I want to put on a podcast and wash dishes right now? That's kind of what I'd like to do, but clearly he has something to share with me and he should take priority. So that's really what that piece of the path is all about.
And if, I mean, just keeping tabs on the individual relationships within the house, it can also keep you aware of like when kids start to struggle, when they start to not, versus like feeling blindsided when all of a sudden they're
Yes.
struggling. But if you're constantly keeping tabs on those individual relationships, you start to notice the gradual decline if someone starts to struggle. And you can intervene early. You can just spend a little extra time with them. I mean, one parent might have just said, go to bed. Why are you hanging out upstairs? Go to bed.
Yes,
But someone
exactly.
who's paying attention, like, hey, what's going on? You want to talk? Yeah, da, 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 whatever it might be, they want to be with you for a little bit longer. And you can recognize that because you've been paying attention to that and who they are and what they are as a person. I love
You're
that.
exactly right. Yeah, and honestly, that's more my strength is recognizing when things are kind of needing some extra help, and then I kind of let my husband know. So here's just one example. So last year in fifth grade, this is when they show the fun puberty video in school.
Yes.
And I
Yes.
have three sons. So like I'm great with the baby stuff, but like I recognize as they get older, they're going to need their dad more in some ways. And this is part of the magic of moving was that now we have my husband home a lot more. He used to have to go out to work. That's besides the point, but we recognize like at some point they need him more than just mommy as like little kids, right? So
Right.
one night he was saying to me, he's like, Mom, I really want to talk about this, but I really want to prefer to talk to dad about it. So then I like shared that with my husband, and then they took, made time like the very next day to discuss. So it's a matter of like sometimes I'm like the conduit. I'm like, hey, Joe, like they need you for this or whatever the case may be. But it's just again, just being aware of what their needs are, how you can best meet them. Sometimes the needs are best met by getting someone outside the family. Like we're not really great with, we don't have any power tools now that we moved. We had to like leave all that stuff behind. My oldest son wants to work with power tools. So we found this local library that you can get certified to use different stuff. And I'm like, great, we've recognized his need and we found a way to fulfill it, even though we couldn't be the ones to physically do it.
Right. Sometimes as parents, we need to humble down and just do what's right for our kids. Sometimes a kid says, oh, I want to talk to daddy about it, or I want to talk to mommy about it. And we're like, wait, no, you can talk to me about it though. Come on, talk to me about it. Or like, I want to do this. Well, I don't know how to do that, but I will learn how to do that because my baby, I will do anything. Mom, dad, it's okay. Other people can help your kids sometimes. And like when they say like it takes a village to raise a kid, they're not kidding. Like your kids, like the people in your life whom you trust, the people whom you love, those are also people whom your kids love. They're also people that are in your life for a reason. And so sometimes we just need to humble down and do what's right for our kids instead of letting our pride get the best of us when we're in a situation and we can't directly help.
I completely agree. And honestly, we consider that resources for the kids. So I made it. So when we moved here, my littlest, he's now in kindergarten, he made a friend whose dad owns this computer company, and my oldest is really interested. And because we made this connection, he's going to actually have him come in and help build some machines and like try to take care of some of the 3D printers. And my son is like incredibly excited. And I just told him that this is what it means to have a resource. And if you're grateful for that resource, they will pour back into you. You know, I mean, do I have time to go buy printers and learn how to use them just to give my kid that experience? No, and it would actually be kind of silly for me to do that. I have a resource over here who's willing. Make that connection, show that you're thankful, and things can grow.
Man, that 5-year-old better be saying, like, I need a 5% commission off all things
Yeah,
here, okay? Homeboy's networking already. Good.
that's right.
Get that boy a business degree. No, that's awesome. I love all these concepts that help families grow together with connection. Connection is key. I love that so much. As we wrap up, this has been so fun. I love it so much. Where can people see what you guys are up to? Shameless plug time. Let's hear it.
Thank you. So everything is basically combined at strongfamilyproject.com. We have a free PDF there you can print out of the Strong Family Path to get you started. We do have a podcast and it's on all the regular, you know, YouTube, Spotify. It's all linked at our website, strongfamilyproject.com.
Awesome. And that will be in the podcast description. So please, guys, go check them out. They're doing wonderful things to help everybody connect a little bit more. And thank you guys so much for listening to this week's episode of the Save the Kids podcast. Just a reminder, if you'd like Save the Kids to come to your community and give some speaking presentations, whatever you want from us, there is a speaking form linked in the podcast description as well that you can contact us there. Always remember, you are wonderful, you are worthy, and you are worth it. Go home and give your kids an 8-second hug, and we'll see you on the next one.